Appreciate you rocking with us. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. C.J. Gardner-Johnson, safety for the Texans, previously played with the Philadelphia Eagles, won him a Super Bowl last year, and he's played in many other places around the league, where seemingly he's developed a little bit of a reputation, and that, amongst other things, came up in an hour-long conversation he had in a sit-down with the Pivot podcast, very good podcast, former players, that I was talking about this earlier. I think they provide a real good space for guys, and for him in particular, I thought that was very interesting. We were talking earlier about some of the stuff with him, and it really refocused around the idea of him seemingly, like, often feeling like he's misunderstood, and how our interpretations on that, especially as he's talked about that through this. And the question I think you came with, Lopez, was, are we getting the best version of C.J. Gardner-Johnson?
Yes.
Coming into this season?
It was more of a statement.
Okay.
I think that we are. And that can certainly backfire. And, you know, we talk about, misunderstood. Well, there was a reason he was initially understood that way. So I think he's had both ends of the spectrum, but I think he's on the better end of it now and maybe a little bit more understanding of who he is and how he should be.
Yeah, and I think some of that comes from everything he does seems to come from a genuine place.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes those things aren't taken well for a good reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he lacks the ability to take accountability. I think there's some times where he does not take full accountability. He'll take partial accountability. I think all of that adds into kind of the ways in which he's a little bit difficult to understand. But there's a few things that really gave me, not that I needed a level of reassurance, but made me feel even better about C.J. Gardner-Johnson as an acquisition and what he means. And I'd like to start here, Fig, with C.J. Gardner-Johnson, number 9, because he could be talked about as a little bit of a live wire, especially on the field. Like the idea of, you'll remember back a few years ago when they played the Bears, where I think it was like Wims, a player that, you know, he had a hit and the old boy jumped up and tried to hit him in his helmet. That came up in the conversation. There's other instances where you could kind of look at C.J. Gardner-Johnson as like, oh, a live wire on the field. This was him talking about, Ryan Clark asked him specifically, do you turn your energy up in a big game to raise your teammates' energy because you're a live wire type guy? This was his response.
I calm down.
Really?
You can ask the film team. This third quarter, 6 minutes left. Take a deep breath. Because I know if I get out my body or get too up, we get out of control. Mm. It's been the biggest games we done played, and I was just like, I can't do what I do. I can't do what I do. Super Bowl, I was fine being the safety valve and understand, I just don't let the ball go over our head. I don't care about no tackle right now. I don't care about knocking somebody head. That's not my job right now. Like, I calm down because I don't watch big games on TV so much. I'm like, why not me? I'm like, I need to be the last team standing. And when we lost the first Super Bowl, it just hit even more. I'm like, I was on the stage and just the top of the mountain. And you got to think about only, 59 teams won Super Bowl? 53 players, exactly? I want to be one of them. I was one of them. And that's why I had to calm down. Kick back. Don't even the whole week. I didn't leave the room.
And even within that answer, it felt like there was various maturity levels displayed for me, from my interpretation. But I did think that there was a level of maturity in, okay, I think it'd be easy for you to imagine that the answer to it is, hey, you're an energy guy. In a big moment, do you turn your energy up to bring others' energy up? And he's like, actually opposite.
Yeah.
Like, I recognize that these moments matter so much that I have to be very measured with the way I go about it. And just the idea that a guy who is viewed as, oh, he's overly energetic. I mean, even think of Aziz, right? Somebody that was portrayed last year as, oh, man, he gets out of control. The idea that he has that clear mentality of, I need to have a governor on what I do, I think that is an encouraging thing. I don't know if you heard it in the same way.
Well, I heard the same thing a slightly different way, and this is where – this was the moment in the podcast where I thought, okay, so he is a – you know, he's got whatever has happened and whatever the Eagles or whomever else thought of him in his past. But we're going to get the best version of him, because the way I interpreted what you just talked about, similar but different in this way. I think he said he said it actually. When I get turned up like that, when I get that hype like that, I'm not as good.
One of the interpretations I was interested in.
I'm not as good as if I just, as he put it, take a deep breath, calm down, slow everything down. And that's something that I don't think a younger C.J. Gardner-Johnson would have done. I think he would have been hyped up. I think he would have been over the top. Let's hair on fire. Let's knock everybody's head off. And I think that's why this was the moment in the podcast when I said, we're getting a really good version of him. We really are.
Does any of you look at that and say, hey, the idea of, you know, I'm not worried about tackling. I'm just worried about the ball not going over my head. I mean, and again, I don't know that if that's the entirety of the outlook over the fullness of the game for him, or if he's just like, hey, ground yourself, focus, and then all of those come back. But is there any of you that thinks that, hey, when he's trying to put a governor, he might not be playing to the fullness of himself, though?
No, because I think this is his best. You know, he said, you know, in the Super Bowl, I knew I can't be that guy because that guy's out of control and we're not as good. And I'm not going to worry about tackles or knocking somebody's head off or whatever because they need me to not get beat deep. That is a mature football player. Then, you know, a team, you know, a swarmy guy that puts the team first. And I really enjoyed that. I thought it was, again, you're right, though. Some of his answers kind of scatter back and forth, and you can interpret it like, ooh, or you can interpret it like, okay, he's coming along. And I think that's just him. I think that he still has those tendencies. Like, I mentioned this to you during a break earlier, like the old Roger Rabbit thing, Jessica Rabbit. I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way. I don't think he's bad, but I think he has some tendencies occasionally.
Somebody said Reggie wins both after he tells Johnny won his read his book. Oh, sorry, that's
I thought about that.
I didn't even.
I thought about.
Wow, my bad.
You know, I ain't want to be held in contempt, so I kept it to myself.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah. My bad. We continue.
Whole trial, both those trials were tainted.
There are no untainted trials at this point. I'm sorry. All right, we continue listening and, you know, kind of reacting to some of CJ Gardner-Johnson on the Pivot podcast. And this is where, again, I think that he is so interesting to me because it's not black or white. It is not extremes. It is some gray area in the middle, at least in my interpretation or in my view of it. Because this was him talking about, do you recall after he left the Eagles? And I mean, there's a lot of the conversation here that is about, you know, kind of the feelings there and what his interpretation of the goings on were.
Yeah.
But at one point in this, you know, CJ Gardner-Johnson made a statement of the Eagles not going to win a Super Bowl again without me. Right. Obviously, you know, referring to the idea that he came back, they won a Super Bowl. And, you know, now that he's going, like, they're losing something huge.
Yeah.
He was asked if what his current thoughts were on that statement now with a little bit of time.
I retract them, and I wouldn't even say it because I play with those guys. And I know how they will feel. Like, Chauncey, you tripping. It's a disrespect to Jalen Carter. A.J. Brown. I can name all those guys on that team. Lane Johnson.
Right.
Respectfully, because Lane is my big vet. And Lane would tell me, hey, Chance, I got your back. But when you do too much, I don't got your back. And that's one of those moments that's too much. Because it's taken away from his career.
That's another good sign if you're a Texans fan to be getting a guy that is self-aware. You know, self-aware. He knows his shortcomings and some of the things that he can do, but self-aware enough to recognize them.
There's one of those ones that made me go, okay. Yeah. So, like, there's definitely some maturity in there. There's also still some things that are going to consist. There's going to be some consistent things because some of these things I can go, all right, he's definitely, like, been very thoughtful about them.
Mm-hmm.
He has his reasonings, and I don't know that those are always excuses.
Maybe
sometimes
justification.
They are. Sometimes those are justifications. This one, I was like, he said that months ago. Like, I'm not talking years ago.
Yeah.
This is a statement he made months ago. Now, of course, with the, you know, with the gratitude and the opportunity to have some time to reflect on it. Clearly, he comes with a reasonable, look, I shouldn't say that. I would retract that. That, you know, negates what they do.
Mm-hmm.
But just months ago, you were willing to make that statement in a place where I don't even know it was entirely reactionary. Like, you had probably had an opportunity to think about that a little bit. So I think that as much as I want to give CJ Gardner-Johnson the credit for, like, he's a lot more mature. He's not kind of the guy that he has always painted out to be. Mm-hmm. But there is some level of truth, for lack of a better way of saying it. Like, there's a reason, as you're talking about, that he is difficult to understand at times. And I think that is where then I'm looking at the Texans, and I believe and I hope that they have the capabilities to the spaces where those proclivities do pop up. The possibility of being a guy who maybe an outburst, I don't know how much that matters, like, verbally, but then what are the field playing equivalents of that? are the Texans capable of, or not are they? I think that they are capable of, with the guys that they have in that locker room, with the camaraderie that they have, and with the amount of respect that is reasonable to have for D'Amico Ryans. Is that all capable of kind of keeping those things in tow for so that on his behalf for the things that he can't necessarily control mm-hmm. in the ways that it seems like he wants?
Look, you know, he didn't get that reputation and some of those criticisms because they just decided to do it. He got those because he did something to make people have those opinions of him. So also you have to look at it in such a way that, yeah, that might have been true. And it was very true, as you said, just very recently in some of the things that he said. But just enough to be here now and in this environment with D'Amico and with the right people around him, you know, maybe, and then time and having, you know, won the Super Bowl and been reflective like he is, I think he'll still be just – I think he's the alpha on this defense. You can talk about Al-Shaair and Will Anderson and all that, but in terms of like an alpha guy that is just going to be kind of leading the way, whether it's vocally or whatever, I think he's that guy. But – it's also kind of a live wire, and you got
to
deal with that.
Yeah, I'm excited for it, though, yeah. Because in listening to him, just the maturity that he has within him, mm-hmm. that the thoughtfulness that he has, especially as it pertains to football, super excited to see how that continues to, you know, find its way out. We saw that early on with him linking up with Kamari Lassiter early and getting on the practice field, or really just in a field working on things. This was his evaluation of Kalen Bullock and Jalen Petrie, some of his now, you know, mates in the secondary for the Texans.
I'll be honest with you.
You Bullock? Know what I'm saying?
Nice.
No, he's phenomenal.
I just trained him this weekend.
I talked to him. I don't know how you didn't have 12 plus picks last year.
Wow.
He dropped four.
Four.
Kalen Bullock. Oh. He was out there this weekend. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Talk here with the USC.
All right, this is not Petrie.
He can go too.
You know what's so crazy? I see him being like a linebacker. Cause like
that's what he do. He probably played by
man,
himself.
The way he run the gap.
And what's the other guy?
He basically played Sam because he played nickel.
That knocked Trevor head off. Al, Akir, Azeem.
Oh, he's a monster.
Azeem.
Hey, I love
him. And that's why your coach, the real one.
Yeah.
Yeah, your coach, he gonna rock with y'all.
Akir, Aleel.
Happens to the best of us, don't it? they knew who they were talking about, though.
Oh, they all knew. Exactly who they were talking about. Yeah.
No, they know ball, right? Like all of those things on point. Kalen Bullock, incredible guy taking the football away. Jalen Petrie, obviously, like things we talk about, plays like a linebacker with some more mobility and obviously a little bit more ability to cover than I think your average mm-hmm. linebacker, if we're not talking about Fred Warner. One more that I wanted to put in here, about the quarterback of the team. How about the praise that C.J. Gardner-Johnson has for, I guess, his namesake, his other C.J. on the team?
Competitor. A dog, like, and willing to lead. I play a lot of, like, Drew was one of those quarterbacks willing to lead us. And getting shipped to Philly was kind of a blessing. Because, you know, being in New Orleans, you know, the situation was hard. So we're looking for a leader. It's easy when you gravitate around a leader like Jalen. So when coming to another team, it's like, you don't got to say much. You just sit back and just encourage them. It's the only thing you can do with those type of quarterbacks because – you can't put too much on their plate. They got a lot going on. So if I could just be that teammate, like, bro, you him.
And he is. Yep.
You don't have any concerns about CJ in leadership at this point, right? Like, I mean,
no.
You got a guy like CJ Gardner-Johnson coming in and being like, you know, again, he has such great respect. I heard him talk about a number of guys in this podcast about the guys that, you know, he respected that gave him game at various points. And that's a guy that's coming in, seeing a third-year quarterback, about to be a third-year quarterback, and going, I don't really need to give him much. He's cool. I thought that was, like, really cool to hear, even though I think we believe that largely. Mm-hmm. It's cool to see a dude, like, specifically lay that out flatly. Like, nah, I just need to make sure to continue to support him.
Yeah, and he's seen. He knows what it looks like.
I mean.
He knows what leadership looks like.
Depend on how you feel about Jalen Hurts. Yeah. That's one thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's any level of debate on Drew Brees and the way that he
leads exactly.
in particular as well. So. There you go. A little CJ Gardner-Johnson. Still, there's so much. It was a rich hour of conversation. I thought that he was a deeply intriguing conversation. So shout out to the guys, the fellows of the Pivot Podcast. And of course, CJ Gardner-Johnson, who we'll hear a lot from this year for you Houston Texans. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, everybody's favorite time of the show is when we hand things over to Figgy Fig for the mixtape. What you got for us, man?
Yeah, so it's a thing called Gen Z Stare. And it is trending on social media right now, and it made the top five list of Google searches. I will explain what that is. Plus, Starbucks is leaning into something that baristas hate.
Oh, okay, cool. Let's find out what next.
Yes, it is the mixtape in the loop, Sports Radio 610. It's your man, Figgy Fig, holding it down on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday to everyone out there. So it's a thing called Gen Z Stare. Are you guys familiar with Gen
Stare, as in staring at
something? Yeah, looking. Yep.
The Gen Z stare.
Okay.
Do you know what that is?
I do not.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I'm not familiar either.
Yeah, so a lot of people giving Gen Z people a hard time now on social media, TikTok, and all that. Because apparently, the Gen Z stare is pretty much calling out Gen Zs by not... pretty much not knowing how to talk to people like other generational people.
I don't know what it is, but I'm liking this because it sounds true.
It's just having a regular conversation. So just talking to, you know, just small talk with a stranger or something like that. And they say Gen Z people just kind of stare and look around real awkward. So they call that the Gen Z stare.
I'm not Gen Z.
Are you Gen Z?
I'm not
you
Gen Z.
You ain't Gen Z.
No, I'm saying I buy this. Gen Z can be a little bit,
very uncomfortable when just talking in real life.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see a Gen Z, hey man, how you doing? What's going on?
And you get a stare,
and they get like a weird, like a deer in the headlight type stare.
Well, I mean, if anything, I guess our generations have to like account for that because we the ones that got them like learning from the phone. Consistently,
is that specifically it though? You learned from a large phone? Part of it.
Well, I'm a millennial, and I think the millennials are the last of the generations that obviously
we kind of know all the parts.
We grew up like we had a level of growth without like social media in particular, but without
maybe
like,
more social media
that particular nose
in the phone for 10 hours.
Right.
Yeah.
That's all they know. Right. Like that is not only is it a something that they it's integral to their social sphere and interaction. And I think that plus, I mean, obviously we could talk about being locked in those types of situations and those things kind of pulling away from the social interactions, the number of them, the frequency, and then obviously just the quality of those that I imagine would contribute to this, right? Somebody said their daughter does it all the time. They hate it. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is overanalyzing. Maybe it's just, you know, different generations are different and they operate in a weird... I don't know, but I feel like that probably has a good amount to do with it, where so much of the interaction happens through the medium of the internet, that interpersonal, that very much instant face-to-face, having to figure
out
what the small talk
is. Could they go into a room with three people and nobody has a phone and just have a conversation?
Yeah, I think some
people... On the aggregate, there's individuals that are obviously capable.
Like, I hate to generalize a whole group of people. I think it is some people that can do that.
Well, how about if I put a lot of people, by and large, millennials can hold their own in any circumstance. You know, could Gen Zers, by and large?
Well,
I don't know. Like taking the phone away in general, that's going to drive a lot of people.
But
nuts.
You could do it. You've done it.
Yeah, no, I could do it.
Yeah,
I couldn't. Why are you saying I couldn't?
No, you could do it. You have great conversational skills.
So if you go to like a comedy show. And they put your phone up, phones.
Yeah,
like would you be able to have a good time?
Well, yeah, and I think that there's probably a large portion of Gen Z that can have a good time in that portion. I think we're talking about maybe a longer amount of time of needing to do having like that interaction, or maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I'm talking about Keister.
Yeah, no, but here I don't think this statement is getting that deep like that. But they just talking about a simple. Hey, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Oh, just kinda, a little small talk. Just, that's true.
Yeah.
They just look at you like.
And I do think that is probably like social media, because we really do cut out it's very different. Like the small talk things that get us into a conversation, those little kind of colloquialisms. Mm-hmm. We don't have as much hey, how's the weather in a social space? So yeah, that is fair. Like just not knowing how to handle the generals, like, hey, how you doing? Oh, doing all right. Or trying to get like you, or whatever those little things are that
they
do.
They just kind of look at you
to acknowledge.
Why are you talking to
me? That's
fair. Yeah. Yeah. So Google came up with a list of things people searched. I'm relating it to this, okay, to the Gen Z stare. So they came up with a top five list of is it rude questions.
Okay.
So is it rude questions? These are things people are Googling. So it's the top five is it rude questions. So I'm gonna start with number five, and I want to know. Let me know if this is rude or not. I want y'all to let me know if it's rude or not. So number five, they said, is it rude to go into a restaurant an hour before close?
An hour?
An hour before close.
Not even remotely.
An hour. What's the number though? Because my mom thinks it's way, way, way later than I know. I know it to be.
I ask at half an hour. Do you think we could have a meet? I go to the front and say, hey, know you're closing in half an hour. Do you think we could, everything would be cool? I ask in half an hour. But an hour, you walk in. You just walk in an hour before.
I agree.
Yeah, I
don't think it's rude. I don't think it's rude. If they close at 10 o'clock, then that's what time they're closed.
Yeah.
It might be someone in the kitchen that's a little annoyed at 1 hour, but that one's on them. If you walk in at like 15 minutes.
15 minutes is too much.
That's on you.
And also, like me, I wouldn't do it because I'm just kind of courtesy. Strength off of courtesy. But I feel like the quality isn't the best when you go a little later too.
Yeah.
Closer to close.
Right. Even if it's just
so
like,
me personally, I don't want to do it because I know I ain't going to get the best quality.
Yeah. Right. Fair.
Yeah. Just off the strength of they might not want to. Mm-hmm. Like the people in there are like, oh, word.
Okay. Oh, all we got is this, this, and that.
Yeah.
Well, even if they got the whole menu, they're like, all right, see how good I make it.
We'll take care of you.
See how good.
Yeah. So number four, is it rude to stare at someone? We went through that already. Number three, is it rude to invite someone to a bridal shower and not the wedding?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Why is that rude?
Bridal shower, but you know what? We'll talk to you later.
But some would argue.
No, there's no. Let me hear your argument.
Hey, some would argue. You want
to
have
fair.
You want to have more people a part of the experience, but not everybody can end up at the wedding. You know what I mean? So you get to be a part of like the shower. You know, enjoy the nuptials of sorts.
What's that book? Was it Ann Landers? You know, the old common courtesy book or whatever back in the day. You invite someone to the shower, you damn well better invite them to the wedding.
What about vice versa?
Wedding and not the shower?
Yeah, oh, that's fine.
Because sometimes I feel like, damn, I'm not cool enough to go to this.
Yeah.
But you invite me to the wedding?
Like, no,
I want to get cool and get loose and all that stuff.
It's an escalating scale.
Okay.
The wedding is bigger and better than the shower. So you're cool. It kind of makes up for everything.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Number two is it rude to wear sunglasses indoors?
And I don't know how you feel about
this. I would say no.
This is where I was going to go. It used to be yes.
Yeah.
I think today it's no. It used to be very rude to walk into a room with sunglasses or a hat.
Yeah.
Or even my mother would slap the hat right off my head if I tried to eat with a hat, you know, eat dinner with a hat on. And now all those things are just socially acceptable. You can eat with a hat, walk into a room with a hat, walk into a room with sunglasses.
Yeah, it's a fashion statement.
Yeah.
It's not trying to be rude or anything like that. And it's funny because this kind of happened to me earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
I won't tell you who, but I was wearing some sunglasses inside the NRG. It was around rodeo time and all that stuff. And somebody's like, take your glasses off. And I could tell she was joking but kind of serious. And so I went on to do it because it was somebody I was kind of working with.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, man, what do you think? Like, I'm fly. Like, don't ever tell me to take my sunglasses off, man. This is part of the outfit.
I've been thinking about it the whole time since you asked. And I think you're right that it's not inherently rude. The one place I will say is once you are inside, if you were trying to have like an extended conversation as opposed to like one
take
of those.
Take them off.
It's a layer that you're putting between the person you're talking to that I don't really, I feel, it feels odd.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like if you're having a conversation with someone, I could easily, take them off your face.
Yeah.
All right. And the number one thing people Google, is it rude to, is it rude to refuse a gift?
Okay. To me, this is another gray area. Somebody tries to get me something and I'm like, no, please don't. I don't want anything, you know, no big deal. But if they repeatedly offer, you take it.
Yeah.
Right?
I feel like that first one you said.
The first one is a given.
Somebody is offering you something.
Yeah.
But if I said, here you go, here's a gift for doing this.
And I'm saying, no, I figure, no, I didn't want anything. Don't worry about it. But then if you go, no, really, I wanted you to have it, then I'm taking it. Right?
This is tough because I don't know if it's rude. I just know I'm not. I don't want to do that. That feels real uncomfortable. So is that the barrier for Rude? I don't know. I'd feel real uncomfortable not taking the gift.
See if I said, hey, John, hey, I appreciate you. Let me borrow your tools. Let me get you something.
I would say absolutely not.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But if I came out of nowhere with a gift bag and like, hey, John, I got you something.
Then you take it.
Yeah.
If it's there, you take it.
I ain't going to sit here and say, nah.
Yeah.
One of the weird parts for me, though, is like, what happens if you know you're going to have to re-gift this immediately? You know what I mean? Like, how do I handle this? Or even better, something I saw someone talking about recently was the idea of getting comfortable with like being truthful when you don't like a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I don't know how to do that, but that sounds awesome. Yeah. Like, it sounds awesome to be like, actually not very fond of that.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine myself actually getting to a place of being able to do that.
Yeah, we were talking about, I wish I could just be the guy that said, no. You know, if somebody asks you to, hey, can you, no. You know, I wish I could just say no.
Yeah. Real quick, I got a bonus one.
All right.
Is it rude to let somebody know that you were around their house, maybe let's say yesterday? You're like, oh, I was in your neck of the woods the other day, and they didn't let you know or stop by. Is that kind of rude?
I don't think that's rude.
Now we're having to dive into what your interpersonal relationship is like.
Yeah, I don't think that's rude.
I would not take it as rude personally, but again, I can't necessarily.
Yeah, because I know back in the day was a little different. If somebody said, hey, yeah, I was down the street from your house.
Why didn't you stop by?
Why you ain't stop by? Why you say hello? You could have came by. But I know now times are a little different. People, you just don't stop by somebody's house.
But
I bring that up because I think it was last Friday. I was over by your house. I was over by John Lopez's house.
Mm-hmm.
And we.
Why didn't you stop by?
Yeah, that's exactly what people say. Every time you say, oh, I was over by your house the other day. Why you ain't stop by?
But that's just the natural interplay, because I don't think he wanted you at his house yesterday.
Oh, man, you guys are welcome anytime.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I went out to eat, and I forgot whatever area you stay in. I'm like, this seemed kind of like it's by Lopez's house.
Yeah.
So I looked it up. I was like 9 minutes away from you. I'm like,
cool.
Yeah,
but why didn't you stop by?
It was like a 50-minute walk. we was kind of walking around a little bit. I'm like, okay. Nah. I'm like, he probably busy with the grandkids.
I understand.
It's a Friday, so he.
Oh, Friday I wasn't there.
Yeah, I know. He fishing somewhere.
That also does seem like one of those things that's fallen into the realm of things that we say but don't actually mean.
Yeah.
Hey, just stop by anytime. Don't stop by anytime.
You can stop by my house anytime.
I don't believe that.
Yeah, you can. You can stop by my house anytime.
You better let me know ahead of time.
No way in hell I believe that.
Unless I'm fishing. You can. You don't have to believe it, but you can.
All right, so all sorts of different responses from the 806. Going to a restaurant that close to close is a good way to get food poisoning. Huh, interesting. Somebody said 346, if you go into a restaurant, an hour is fine. 30 minutes, you're the scum of the earth.
Yeah, I agree.
Someone else said, it's absolutely rude to keep your sunglasses on indoors. It makes you look like you're just high as hell and don't want anybody to know. And they also went further to say guys who still wear hats indoors never went to finishing school. I will say I did not go to
never went to what?
Finishing school.
Go ahead and Google that one. From the 346.
Hey, I didn't graduate high school.
That is a good retort. From the 346, they go the other way. They said, nah, man, migraines and stuff exist. So that's an interesting way of doing
it. That's why I wore mine. I think the last time y'all ain't give me a hard time, but I wore my sunglasses because I had like a bad migraine and the lights were kind of getting to me. So I wore them.
832, wedding showers are rude, period. It's a bridal shower. Leave me out of it. I want to play golf and watch sports. And finally, is it rude to speak to someone in another language with a third person standing there that doesn't speak that language? Largely, I think it
is. I think that is.
I'd be a little offended, man.
I'm like,
how y'all going to leave me out of this?
No.
And then nobody likes unannounced visits. You're right.
Yeah.
All right. That is another fantastic edition.
Stop by anytime.
I don't believe that.
Not at all.
I'd be scared to do that too, because you might stop by at the wrong time.
Yeah.
And I don't want to see something different.
Be walking around the house naked.
Yeah. Or I'd be looking like, wait, John ain't got no teeth. Like,
don't act like you don't walk around your house naked sometimes.
I don't. If I ain't showering, I'm clothed.
He looks offended.
I'm not offended. I'm just like,
Brother, you live by yourself, man.
I do. Yeah.
Everybody at some point, right? Is going to walk around their house naked?
Not really, no.
I don't do it as often.
Everybody, except for Reggie.
That's fair. I mean, look.
I don't do it as often, but it's...
I got zero judgment for you. I'm very happy about you. I just feel real comfortable with clothes on. I don't know. I guess this is just how I eat. I am.
Yeah.
Figgy's Mixtape every weekday right here at 1:20 p.m. on In the Loop on Sports Radio 610. At the Figgy Fig on social media is where you get them. If you have something that you believe to be mixtape worthy, he might shout you out, make you famous, so on and so forth. Some 713 said, all right, Lopez, I'll be around 4 p.m.
I'll be clothed.
Okay, good. Excellent. All right. Appreciate you hanging out with us. Coming up next, we get ready to hand things off to the fellas of The Drive, Clint Ron. But before we get there, we've been meaning to talk about it all day. What do the Astros have to do for the second half of the season to go start off with a bang? Is that the way I want to say that? Is that negative
that is
or positive
way.
Connotation? Okay, very good. We'll do that next. Yeah, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Been a very fun Wednesday with you. Appreciate you rock with us. Man, we had a show today now, didn't we? Astros.
That was a show.
That was, we're not done just yet. Getting ready to hand things over to the fellas of The Drive. Clint and Ron just said what's up to the fellas. We'll talk with them in just a moment. Let me say, text line 832. I think society's become so damn pansy. Reason why people may want you to take your shades off is to talk eye to eye, which Gen Z can't do. I mean, that might be some of the reasons why some people are wearing sunglasses. We were talking about a few of the things, mm-hmm. other things. Yeah.
I would do it as a fashion statement. If it goes with the outfit and all that stuff, I ain't just about to have no random.
And I get that times change, man. I mean, again, like when I was a kid, I mean.
And I don't have to like it,
you
though.
You didn't even walk inside with a hat.
Yeah.
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 But yeah, appreciate you guys reacting, responding regardless. Thank you for doing, such, excited for, well, it was a fun All-Star game again. I enjoyed the hell out of it, even mm-hmm. more so than I anticipated. But with that being the case, now that we're on the other side of the All-Star game, we head to the proverbial second half of the season, right? And with that being the case, that takes us to this place where we are looking for, Astros baseball to continue as they have got some really good odds to make the postseason, and rightfully so. Like, this has been a great baseball team. What do the Astros have to do to guarantee they'll be in position to make the run that you want them to in the second half and contend?
Look, man, I don't think they can get there from here, and I think they will get there from here. I honestly, and I've been, you know, exceptionally high on what this squad has been able to do, given, you know, kind of the hand that they've been dealt since spring training. I don't think they can do a whole lot once they get there, unless things change.
Really?
Well,
what gives you pause, if you don't mind me asking?
We now know what the line is, and they're past it. The line of, hey, they can just bring up another pitcher and they'll be fine.
You took the Rangers series as?
The Rangers, both series, both of their final six games.
Fair enough, yeah.
Because I was right in there with everybody else. Man, bring anybody up. They'll go six innings. You know, bring anybody up. He'll go 1-for-4 and have a key hit. But they're not there anymore. This lineup needs to get healthy. So number one, and that's, it sounds trite and it's cliche and all that, but they have to get some of these guys back. And I just don't have confidence that their answers are going to be able to do that. You know, they're not going to have everything they're saying. I don't believe.
Is the bar that I have too high, too low? You tell me, because I'm looking at, I mean, how many pitchers are we talking about? Arrigetti, Garcia, Javier, mm-hmm. France. Am I forgetting any? Those are the four
those
that
are the
main
come
four. To mind.
Yeah.
I need one mm-hmm. out of them to come back and be something. Now, of course, I need one of those to come back, and that's already not the easiest thing with these Astros, but I need one of them to come back and find their ability to pitch. And I'm like, I think I can ask for one out of four of those to return first and foremost to pitching and then find some level of form. Is that too far for
no, I think it should be more than reasonable that one of those guys is going to come back and be at least, you know, passable.
And so, and now maybe then I am leaning too heavily on the idea that Hunter Brown will continue to be fine and this was just him needing the All-Star break, and Fromber will continue to be good Fromber without any level of bad Fromber, and we're just going to cruise with those two mm-hmm. being studs that we know we can depend on, and then add one more guy who can give you that level of assuredness, for lack of a better term, and then Lance McCullers Jr., whatever he's able to give you, and then we can coast off of that. Is that then too high of an expectation?
No, shouldn't be. Shouldn't be at all.
But then you're like, in the postseason, that's not enough in your mind?
Because I really believe, here we are talking about, hey, the window might be closing. Well, the window's still open.
Mm-hmm.
And so I still think they need to.
Best team in baseball, I believe, in, of course, as soon as I go to quote the stat, mm-hmm. my mind goes blank. Why does my brain do that?
I don't know. Why
I need to look into that. But.
The weed.
Best team in baseball against teams with a record of 500 or better.
Yeah.
I mean, literally nine more wins than losses, 28-19 in that stretch.
I think they need to make a move. And obviously, you know, they need to make a call on if they're going to be able to know and get one of these pitchers back. And if not, they need to get a pitcher. They have to. You can't go just Hunter Brown, Fromber. Hunter Brown, traditionally, his worst month has been July, so you got to figure he'll come back and pitch really well at the end of the year. Fromber has been...
Lopez stats.
So July has been his worst month, if you go back and look. Fromber, we're gaining confidence in him. No confidence right now in Lance McCullers Jr., no confidence beyond that. You know, we've talked about how the record is really not that good with anybody other than those first two guys starting. You got to go get him pitcher. And, you know, we mentioned this just yesterday, you know, figure something out with Christian Walker. You got to figure something out. That's a corner infielder, man. That's a guy that needs to hit.
That is fair. Yeah. I think I said this to you off air, but I guess it's worth saying on air, because I heard on Monday you with Luke's talking about
why don't we treat him the way that we treated Jose Abreu?
Yeah, and I looked at it and I was like, yeah, he has not lived up to expectation at this point. But that's because Jose Abreu was terrible.
He was awful.
Like, I'm talking about batting average in the 100s and OPS in the 300s. I mean, like, the guy Christian Walker is at least batting in the 200s versus with an OPS in the 600s. Those are not the same.
Yeah, there's that, and then there was Jose Abreu.
Yeah. So I was like, I feel like that's different. But your point is well taken, right? You do need some level of...
You got to have a corner infield that can produce.
Man,
hey, they too damn close.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that.
No, they're close.
I'm just saying they too damn.
Well, my question.
They're too damn close. My question. What you expected them.
Last week, I believe, or maybe it was Monday, with Luke is why is Christian Walker not getting the same treatment as Jose Abreu? And because he's been bad, but he brought up a good point. Reggie brought up a good point. Yeah, he's been bad, but he hasn't been that bad.
Right, and that doesn't mean that I don't think that. Hey, we just keep rolling on the same path. we need to get better.
Not the last year. But the first year when Jose was getting hell, and Jose ended up with 18 home runs and 90 RBIs, and played well in the postseason, he's approached that first year.
Yeah.
Now the second year we've just completely lost him.
Yeah.
But that first year when Jose
was getting torched.
He was
that's true.
Too.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Remember when it was that embarrassing moment where he hit that home run his first one in Oakland and he slid.
Yeah.
In the dugout.
Showing off. Remember back of the baseball card. Yeah, you got to look at the back of the baseball. Yeah. That was Bagwell. If you look at the back of the baseball card, that just tells me what you've done.